I'm Paul Wiegraf, Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. Joining me in the studio today is one of my colleagues from one of the other cultural agencies in the Department of State here in Delaware, Tim Slavin, the Director of the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs and the State Historic Preservation Officer. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Paul.
Quite an impressive title.
Yes, it is.
Sounds like you're responsible for an awful lot here in Delaware.
Well, we do have an awful lot going on in the division, and it's surprising to a lot of people when they hear all of what we do. We have our hands in historic sites that we manage across the state. We have a campus of sites that stretches from literally the Pennsylvania-Delaware line in Claymont all the way down to the Maryland-Delaware line in Fenwick Island. We have museums that we operate. We have collections that support those museums. And then we have a myriad other activities that we do with our State Historic Preservation Office, with affiliate programs that we have. And it's a very exciting place to work. It's really kind of a wonderful place to work.
Now, I was on your website, and it seemed, correct me if I'm wrong, it seemed like you parsed out, there was a list of museums. And then there was a list of historic sites. What's the distinction?
Right. So we have 43 properties that we manage up and down the state. Some of those are we operate on a day-to-day basis. Every day we come in, turn the lights on and off, and we operate them as museums or as special events centers. And then we have a whole range of properties that we manage as historic sites, and we reach out to local communities, and we ask them if they'd be willing to operate that site for us. We're the landlord. We pay for everything, including all the capital improvements and upgrades. They sometimes help us to raise private money, which is wonderful because then we can match taxpayer dollars with private foundation money or with private donations. And then they operate the site for us. And what that does is it allows the community to have access to the site. And it allows them to kind of build a relationship with the site where they want to preserve the site. And it's not just a state site that they don't know anything about. We've been very successful in doing this. I'll give you an example in Smyrna with Belmont Hall. This was a site that the state owns. We own it. And we used to operate it as a conference center. If you were inside state government, you knew how to make a reservation for that conference center. It was open Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30. That was it. And we changed it around. We kind of turned the river around. We created a friends group there. They're a private, not-for-profit. They operate the site now. Now the site is open more on weeknights and weekends than it is during the day. And that's what the community really wanted. They wanted a place to hold smaller functions, social events, weddings are held there, and it's once again become part of the community there.
So the Friends of Belmont Hall so it takes care of the operational activities there, but you retain the sort of the landlord responsibilities of maintenance and that
right.
sort of thing?
Right. We make sure the property is kept up. We cut the grass. We do all the things that a landlord would do, and then they can focus on programming and kind of making those ties to the community.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because I'm from North Wilmington. Is Claymont Stone School, is that another one of those?
Stone
properties?
School is not one of ours, but
that's
right across
yours.
The street, the Darley House, is
right,
one.
Right,
and that's another
okay.
great example of mm-hmm. a partnership that we have where that's a challenging site for us mm-hmm. in that it's an old historic home. And what we've seen the trend with museums is the people aren't going to historic homes so much now as they're going to other experiential places and museums and larger sites.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked with the Claymont Renaissance Development Group, and they are our tenant there. I think they pay a small amount of rent per year.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly under market. But in return for that, they operate the building, they take care of it, and they've made it quite a center there for the community. It's, I believe, they host art shows there. They have some wall space that they use as kind of a quasi-gallery when they're not hosting meetings and other things.
And that certainly serves you well, because I assume it's better to have somebody occupying a building that you have ownership of than to have that building sitting idle.
Oh, yes, it is. So one of the things I always say is that something happens to buildings when they're not occupied. They melt. Okay. They don't deteriorate. They melt. And a good example is actually something that happened at Darley House a few years back. And it was one of the things that we used and said, let's see if we can get better at this. When Darley House was not occupied, we had a simple issue of a bird flew into a window and knocked a pane of glass out of a window. Now, we were doing our monthly inspections of the site while it was buttoned down. And but it took us 2 weeks before we discovered, because mm-hmm. we were in the lag between inspections, 2 weeks before we discovered that we had a broken pane of glass that caused water to infiltrate into the building, mm-hmm. that caused wood floors and plaster to get damaged. Whereas if someone was living in the building, they would have picked that up in an hour or
right.
2 hours and
right.
fixed it right away, mm-hmm. or called us and we would have had it fixed right away. So my number one goal is, let's get these buildings lived in. Let's get these buildings used, because it helps. It helps the building. It helps us. It helps the community.
Now, in addition to those sites, some of the featured museums you have throughout the state?
Yeah, we have five museums that we operate on a regular basis. Some of these museums are open 360 days a year. In Newcastle County, we have the Newcastle County Courthouse in Old Newcastle, which is just a wonderful site. And our partners there, we operate the site and we staff the site. But right around the block, we have in the Arsenal Building, the Newcastle Historical Society. And then just across the street in the Reed House is the Delaware Historical Society. And all those folks who work up there in this field of history, they get it. They know it's about the visitor. It's not about turf. It's not about who runs what site. Let's make it a visitor experience. And we've been helped greatly by the National Park Service there with the new national park. So that's one. In Kent County, we have three sites. We have the Old State House, which sits on the green mm-hmm. in Dover. We have the Johnson Victrola Museum, somewhat unknown or lesser known, but no less significant collection and museum, which sits just two blocks from the Old State House. And then we have the wonderful John Dickinson Plantation, which sits on about 400 acres out on St. Jones Neck, just south of the Dover Air Force Base. And in Sussex, we operate the Swannendale Museum in Lewis, which is kind of an iconic structure that sits right in the middle of town. And it's just a kind of a neat little museum to kind of get oriented about the history of Lewis and walk around Lewis, which is a wonderful, wonderful walking community.
And in addition to your physical resources, the museums, the historic sites, you have a lot of resources on your website. I was on there just the other day and noticed that you have links to the John Dickinson's letters from a Pennsylvania farmer.
I mean, right,
John Dickinson sort of, was he from Delaware or was he from Pennsylvania?
Yes, he was. Absolutely, he was from Delaware. We don't refute that, and we won't let Pennsylvania claim that.
Right.
Yes, we've been doing a lot of work with the Friends of the Dickinson Plantation mm-hmm. and in celebrating the publication of this, the anniversary of the publication of this letters from a Pennsylvania farmer. In fact, I believe this Saturday at 10 a.m., there is an event at the Delaware Public Archives in Dover mm-hmm. At the Delaware Public Archives, where the governor is coming and some other speakers are coming, and to speak about the importance of Dickinson. Kind of, you know, he's kind of a lesser known figure in the Revolutionary War, but his writings are really compelling when it comes to kind of what he was saying, what he was promoting.
Well, he as a former history teacher, I know he was not as enthusiastic about breaking away from England as some of the others.
He was not. He was a true Quaker.
Yeah.
I think he sought resolution in everything he approached first,
right.
a peaceful resolution, and that his faith guided him a lot in
yeah.
his thinking.
Yeah. Now, I know that your division of Historical and Cultural Affairs, over the last probably 18, 24 months or so, went through a very rigorous process to become accredited.
Yes, we did.
What does that mean,
so
and what did that entail?
Well, thanks for asking. We just received our accreditation from the American Alliance for Museums, and this places us in one of about 1,000 museums nationwide, out of a total of about 33,000 museums. So we're in the kind of the upper tier. And it's a very rigorous program to ensure that you have best practices operating in your administration and your finances and your human resources, but also in your collections management, your interpretation, your disaster preparedness. There are probably a dozen different categories where we really had to work very hard to make sure we had these best practices. And The credit goes to the people I work with. You know, I always say I'm doubly blessed. I do something I love to do for a living, and I work with great people. And the people at the Historical and Cultural Affairs really kind of joined arms and got through this. And we received the accreditation, and we are one of three museums in Delaware to have accreditation, the other two being the Winterthur and Hagley Museums.
Mm-hmm. That's incredibly impressive. You know, I'm thinking as you're speaking, As a fellow division director, your division, I suspect, is much larger than mine with quite a broad array of skills and expertise represented by your staff. How large is your division, and what is the range of activities your staff is engaged in?
So we have, don't quote me on the exact numbers, 40, 41 full-time employees, and then an additional 40 plus or minus part-time employees. Mm-hmm. And we have people on staff with advanced degrees in archaeology and anthropology and museum administration and history. But also we have tradesmen. We have who are specialized in historic preservation methods and techniques. We have horticulturalists who take care of the more than 700 acres that we have. And then we have this army of people who are our heart, the heartbeat of our organization, right? They staff the sites that we have, and they interpret the sites, and they interact with the public, and they're just some of the greatest people you'll meet, because that's what makes your experience so special when you go to one of our sites.
Great. I want to turn to programming and a couple other topics, but first let me remind our listeners that you are tuned into News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV in Dover. Our guest today in the studio is the Director of the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs and the State Historic Preservation Officer, Tim Slavin. Tim, you mentioned archaeology, and I noted on your website that there's a link to archaeology. And you said you have some archaeologists on staff. What kind of archaeology are you involved in, and am I correct that if Del Dot unearths something in the construction of a road, that you might be called in?
Well, yes and no. Okay. Long before Del Dot unearths something, we work with Del Dot. So as part of our responsibilities with the State Historic Preservation Office, we review any federal undertaking that takes place in Delaware to ensure that the federal government is not going to harm any cultural resources. This is, we're carrying out the mandates of a federal law, the National Historic Preservation Act, when we do that. And typically, a good example, we'll use Del Dot. A good example is Del Dot comes and says, hey, we're going to repave a state road. Mm-hmm. Well, it's repaving an existing road. The review takes all of 15, 20 minutes and it's done. Then on the other end of the spectrum, we have a new Route 301 that's right, going to be built. Mm-hmm. And it's going to kind of cut through some lands that have never been developed. As part of the process of the cultural review, long before the routes are identified, we are working with Del Dot and with their cultural resources team to look at archival resources, other studies that have been done, and determine where are areas we may want to avoid. And if they are unavoidable and we do have to kind of get into those sites, we then get involved with some archaeology. And we have, with the Route 301, we have had a couple of sites that were excavated fully. They were 19th century farm sites. They yielded some tremendous artifacts, and it will be a tremendous story we'll be able to tell. Our strong preference is not to disturb them, to leave them in, sure, what's called in situ. But there are times when that occurs. We also have a very strong history in Delaware of avocational interest in archaeology. And the Archaeological Society of Delaware has been one of our trusted partners for many, many years. And my predecessor as division director, Dan Griffith, is one of the leaders of that. You and the listeners may have become aware of the Avery's Rest site, which saw some attention in the media around Delaware Day, around December 7th. This was a site that archaeologists had identified in West Rehoboth. They had suspected that it was some kind of a family-based site of ownership from the Avery family in West Rehoboth, dating to the late 1600s. And part of the site had been sold. It was open land. It had never been developed, but it had been sold, and it was going to go into development. And so the Archaeological Society of Delaware approached the owner and said, before you develop, would you mind if we did some digging in this area? And they do it very scientifically. They're very good about it. And they found the remnants of what they thought was the home of the Averys. Mm. And that was fine. And over the course of about four summers when they dig, because that's the digging season, they then discovered that there were some unmarked graves on the site. And when that happens, it triggers a state law that we have. And so we have a more formal role from the division. And we worked with them and determined that these graves were unmarked. They were unidentified. They dated, we thought, to the late 1600s. And we reached out to another partner with the Smithsonian. And the Smithsonian, Dr. Doug Owsley, is involved in a study where he is trying to collect data about the people who populated the Chesapeake region, being from the Delaware to mm-hmm. Chesapeake, the whole Delmarva Peninsula, and for the purposes of collecting DNA. It's just a fascinating study. He wants to collect DNA samples from every known burial from this time period, and he can begin then to develop what the relationships are between the people. So he was very excited about it. We ended up with a total of 11 burials. Mm-hmm. 8 were in one section, 3 were in another section. And the 8 that were in one section all had what was found led us to believe they were Europeans. There were mm-hmm. Christian burials, the way there were, and the burials themselves, there were pins that were evident that would have mm-hmm. kind of prepared the shroud around the body. The other 3 were separate, and there were 2 adults and 1 child. And it was, there was a high suspicion on the site when this was occurring. And then when Doug Owsley from the Smithsonian came in his site, they were able to verify and then verified back in the lab that these remains were of African descent mm-hmm. or African-American mm-hmm. descent. And it really became a very exciting find with these 11 burials. These are some of the oldest burials that we know. They can tell us so much more about our history here in Delaware, and especially where African-American history tends to stop at a certain period, right? The archival record for African-Americans kind of ends, you know, kind of right before the Civil War. And then some families are lucky enough, if they kind of do their research, they can find remnants of letters or government documents that exist back into the Revolutionary War and the colonial period, but it's very rare. Now we're beginning to see other sources like these types of remains help to inform us about who these people were. We're very hopeful, and Doug Owsley is very hopeful from the Smithsonian, that the DNA that will be sampled and used would be able to tell us what part of Africa these people came from, which is fascinating, right?
Yeah, sure.
Which is something I never thought we would ever be able to say. But the other really kind of promising thing that we're doing is we have a partnership with the Delaware Historical Society, and we are advancing the cause for there was enough of the remains of the head and the skull left that we can do facial reconstruction.
Wow.
And we believe that we will see very shortly, you know, within the next 5 years, certainly, an exhibit that will travel all over Delaware from the Delaware Historical Society, which will give these people back their identity, give mm-hmm. them back their faces, which I think is just as compelling a story mm-hmm. as I've been involved in.
So that's really exciting. So the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs, you're not only preserving Delaware's past, but you continue to uncover
Delaware's
past.
Absolutely. You know, sometimes people fall into the trap of thinking that what's done is done and the books have been written and everything else. And we find clues all the time that kind of turn us around, mm-hmm. you know, that make it different for us. Mm-hmm. And so even something as small as a small archaeological project in West Rehoboth, which, you know, we knew about, we were helping out with them. We thought it was important. We had no idea it was going to be significant.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, we have a few minutes left, so I don't want to end without you having a chance to talk about some of the programming that your agency does. I know you have a rich array throughout the state at your various museums.
We do, and we have some programming coming up, which I think is really kind of fascinating and kind of one of the things I've pushed and didn't take much pushing with my folks because they're very creative bunches. I've said, look for intersections where we can have cultural programming that speaks to multiple audiences, not just history, but also the arts. And music has become a big thing. So we have, for instance, we have a monthly concert series at the Old State House, free to the public. And we do that in conjunction with the Delaware Friends of Folk, who are underwritten in part by the Delaware Division of the Arts. So it's just kind of a wonderful confluence.
Yeah.
We also have a 4-part series where we're speaking about African-American music at the Johnson Victrola Museum. and using some of the recordings we have. We have more than 60,000 recordings in the Johnson Victrola Museum, and using them to tell the stories of how African-Americans, these first recordings allowed African-American music to be distributed on a wide basis. And people like Paul Robeson and James Reese Europe, and then we're going all the way up through to modern day and talking about the development of how African-American music developed and then how it became available.
Really a great array. And I know your museums, like the Dickinson Plantation, I believe you have guided tours.
Oh, absolutely.
So all sorts of opportunities.
You show up, we'll have something for you to do.
Yeah. And a little bit about partnerships. I know you've worked with archives. You work closely with them. You work with the Division of the Arts. We share in some arts education programs. There's, I know, coming up in the spring, an opportunity for, is it fourth graders, I believe, coming down to the Green?
That's become a very big program. It's called the Arch Program. We invite schools in, fourth graders to come in. I believe last year it was 1,100 fourth graders came through. And I think there are 20 different stations that are manned, and they rotate through the stations all during the day, and they learn about the arts. They learn about archaeology. They learn about archives. They learn about all manner of things.
And the history of Dover and the Green, really a great array of programs.
And it takes place right outside my office, and I can attest, they enjoy themselves, right? They really have a good time with this. A lot of it is hands-on learning, and it's experiential learning. It's also standards-based, so if you're a teacher out there thinking about a field trip, this is one that kind of fits a lot of your needs.
Right. Well, in the 30 seconds we have left, where can people find out more information about your division?
Easiest place to go to the web. history.delaware.gov. You'll get everything you need, and we'll be glad to help you from there.
Well, thanks so much. Our guest in the studio today has been Tim Slavin, the director of the Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs and the State Historic Preservation Officer. Tim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.